I'm Kathy Geary. Welcome to Now and Then. Today's program features a conversation with the American soprano, Christine Andreas. That was Christine Andreas singing the song Love is Good, which was written by her husband, Martin Silvestri. I recently had a conversation with this talented artist about her creative process and about some of the experiences she's had singing in American Broadway, musical theater, and cabaret performances. Let's listen to what Christine Andreas has to say. Well, Christine, we are so fortunate to have you coming right here to our listening area. You're going to be performing at Bethel Woods Saturday, August 30th at 8 p.m. in the Bradstand Cabaret Series in the Event Gallery at Bethel Woods. And I believe the show is called Love is Good.
Well, it is, right?
Love is good. you have such an interesting career as a musician, as an artist for your entire life. And I was fascinated to read about how you assembled the songs for the Love is Good program. You sang a concert at the White House. For President.
And it was the beginning. It was the very, very beginning of it all.
Well, now, Love is Good is is a song written by Martin Silvestri, who is your accompanist on piano, but I understand there's also a deeper relationship there.
Well, it all began right around there. Marty is now my husband, and I got a phone call from the White House, not realizing it was the White House. I thought somebody was goofing on me, and I was making a joke out of it, and come to find out it was all legitimate, and it really was an invitation to sing for, as I say, George the First.
George
the
Bush.
First Bush. And so I begged him to come east. I told him what it was. He was intrigued, and we put together really my first real cabaret/concert evening. And it was very intimate. It was just 40 people from Bermuda in the living room. So it was awe-inspiring, you know, to be there.
So you consider
I'm a Democrat.
That
it was amazing, and
that's your first cabaret
recording, and that kicked off, you know, my beginnings of a career in a much smaller, more intimate venue for making music without character, just as myself, you know, because I'm a Broadway baby. That's my background.
Mm. Well, your Broadway career is astounding. You're from the New York area, and when you graduated high school, you didn't waste any time, apparently. You go right into New York City, and before long, your debut on Broadway is in one of the most famous American musicals that is known, My Fair Lady, the role of Eliza Doolittle, walking in the footsteps of Julie Andrews. You know, as a very new performer, it's astounding that you came into that role so young and developed, made it your own. That must have been such a feeling of accomplishment for you.
You know, it was an interesting thing because, you know, the press loves to pit you against and make everything competitive. And I can still see the New York Times article, which had me and Julie sort of squaring off with our, you know, in our little Cockney outfits and, you know, charred faces. And I never felt that way. You know, I loved Julie Andrews. I loved My Fair Lady. To me, this was a dream come true. And although other people fell, you know, prey to that kind of hype, I was impervious to it. I just knew that I had to, you know, I was a classicist. I listened to the original. I went back to Pygmalion. I, you know, worked with the dialectician. I was finding my way with it, and my way would never be, you know, I can't be Julie Andrews. I wasn't trying to be Julie Andrews. I respected what she did. I learned from what she did. And then I had to shut all that off and try to find my way. And it was very difficult. I mean, I was terrified. I prayed for it. My prayer was answered, and then I had to create Eliza, and I could sing it. But I was not a very cultivated actress at that point, so I had to really, really, and, you know, this was written initially by Shaw for a 50-year-old actress, you know, Pygmalion. It's a classical piece. There's huge pieces of Pygmalion thrown into it. So it was a little terrifying, but about 3 months into it, I started finding my way.
Amazing.
You know, it was, and I didn't do so badly, so it was, it became fun, ultimately, but sometimes what you wish for is, you know, a lot different than when it happens, you know. But well, it was the beginning, the springboard. And then I did three great revivals with a lot of original energy involved. You know, Agnes DeMille was involved with Oklahoma, and so was Billy Hammerstein.
Mm-hmm. Billy Hammerstein.
And George Abbott at 96 directed Rodgers and Hart's On Your Toes. And so I had original creatives keeping the true spirit, but working with what they had, you know. So it was a wonderful way to begin.
And girls.
Couldn't go to bed, my head's too light to try to set it down. Sleep, sleep, I couldn't sleep tonight, not for all the jewels in the crown. And I could have danced all night, I could have danced all night, and still. Made it so exciting. Why all at once my heart took flight. I only know when he began to dance with me. I could have danced that day.
Christina Andrea singing Could Have Danced All Night from My Fair Lady, from a CD that she released in 2002 called Here's to the Ladies. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF. Today's program features a conversation with the American soprano, Christina Andrea. Well, when you talk about that very first role and the acting, what a challenge the acting was. Obviously, you went in and you were confident in your voice. You were confident.
Oh, yeah,
in your
voice. I knew I could sing it. I mean, and that didn't come from ego. That just came from the joy of singing. You know, and the score is so beautifully crafted, it sings itself, you know, if you have the right voice for it.
Well,
so
if
that
our
part was a piece of cake, really.
There are some wonderful cast recordings available of the work you've done. There's a cast recording of My Fair Lady, the 20th anniversary Broadway revival, On Your Toes, and also that 1980 recording of Oklahoma, and Billy Hammerstein, Oscar's son, directing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was your first Tony nomination for that role?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at your history as a performer, one of the most fascinating things, and you touched on it earlier, was this production called The Fields of Ambrosia.
Yeah.
And your husband, he wasn't your husband at the time, wrote the music. So the inspiration for The Fields of Ambrosia, according to what I've discovered here, is from a movie called The Traveling Executioner.
Yeah, doesn't it make you just want to sit down and write music? The traveling executioner?
Well, it seems like this was a masterpiece. When I read the reviews and the response that it had here in America, what a fascinating piece of music. I'm very anxious to hear some of this recording.
No, it's beautiful. It's fully sung through, so it's operatic in scope in that, you know, there's not a lot of talking. Really American, gritty, unsentimental. And really surprising. You just don't know what's going to happen. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done. And honestly, the world was here wasn't ready for it. I don't think the States was ready for it quite. I don't think the world was ready for it because it has the death penalty in it. It has an electric chair in it, but it's not about that. Mm. It's about American ingenuity. And, you know, the guy gets himself into a jam and he gets himself out of it. And the way he gets himself out of it is... Yeah, it's an intoxicating trip. Mm. So I really, really love that piece.
Ach, Wunder, a gramophone. But you take a chance.
No, I'm gold here. Besides, you all alone. And you said you liked to dance.
Jonas Candide, you may have your faults, but you have a way with you.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
Shall I teach you how to waltz?
Well, I don't mind. Listen, maybe you should think about the rope, Gretchen. They do a job that's pretty good. I ain't saying you should give up hope or nothing. It's just that...
Just that you wish I would.
Oh, no, it's just that you're the one client I wish I never had. That's all.
That's all?
Yeah.
Too bad. Too bad for me. Too bad for you. Too bad you're free. Too bad I'm not too. I wanted so much when so little would do. Too bad for me. And you. When I was a little girl, I would dream constantly the lovers I'd have, of the woman I'd be. I'd open my arms, my heart would stay free. But women see things little girls cannot see. And lovers and dreams die so.
Had the fire in your gut, girl.
For you.
At least you tried.
Too bad you're
most
free.
People let you hear
too
about hell.
I'm not
never
too
even
bad.
Lived before they died.
So
it seems life ain't big enough.
That was from the 1996 original cast recording of The Fields of Ambrosia, performed by Joel Higgins and the soprano Christine Andreas. The lyrics to that were written by Joel Higgins, and the music was written by Martin Silvestri, who is now Christine's husband. You can see Christine and her husband Martin performing cabaret Saturday, August 30th at 8 p.m. at the Bethel Woods Event Gallery right here in our area. It should be a spectacular performance. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then. Let's get back to our conversation with the American soprano, Christine Andreas. Are you still performing any of the music from that Fields of Ambrosia?
Oh, sure. In my cabaret, my concert, I often do a duet called Continental Sunday, which is a delightful piece. I have my husband sing with me several times. because it gives another texture, and also the couple thing between us, that energy that's been cultivated over 20-some years of making music and, you know, intimately knowing each other and appreciating each other, that's all in the show. Without words, you know, that just exists. It's like a third energy in the room. And people love it. They love seeing the couple thing, you know, because it's spatty and feisty and loving and fun and real. And, it's another level of communicating with a crowd. You know,
well,
seeing that and hearing his voice, because he's a composer singer, so he has sort of a rumbly, you know, deep sound as opposed to my clear, bright sound. And the ear is happy for the rest from me for a little bit, you know, and just to hear something else. It's just another texture that we discovered worked. I mean, I have to beg him to sing, but, you know, he's the diva, not me. but when he does, you're really happy. You know, you welcome his sound and you welcome our connection.
It sounds just thrilling. I'm so excited that you'll be...
Well, it's nice. My feeling about cabaret is that when you leave the room, you should feel that without the person just blatantly saying, and then I did this, and then I did that, and this is me, you know, just from this, their voice and their connection to you, you should know them better. You know, you should know a piece of their soul a little bit. Mm. That's the magic of good cabaret. I saw Rosie Clooney years ago at Rainbow and Stars in New York, and she did the simplest thing. Everybody, this is a beautiful room with a view of New York behind you, you know, from up of Rockefeller Center, and, you know, I'd seen younger, less mature artists, good artists, but less mature, you know, and they'd always go, oh my God, can you believe this view? I can't believe I'm here. Isn't this amazing? You know, and, you know, it's obvious. It doesn't need to be stated. Rosie, with her trio of guys, during a break, you know, she sang the front part, and during the break, and they were doing a musical interlude, she was so still, and she just put her hand on the piano. She put her hand on the piano, and she looked out at the view, and she just, under her breath, and you were watching her every second because she wasn't demanding it. She was just existing and being on the stage, and she softly, like, she just touched the piano, and she just went, beautiful. That's all she said. It's like, I know Rosie Clooney. You know, I knew her because of that incredible grace and no needing to tell me anything. Her just being there and drinking in that moment of perfection and saying that soft word, beautiful, like I was in her world, you know. And as a mature artist, that's what you begin to do, is to pare away all the bravura and just be. And just make your music, you know, with the people present, and be grateful and appreciate the whole thing. And that somehow, just by you doing that, it's very sacred, kind of. Everybody goes into that place with you, you know, and you leave the room a little more uplifted, you know, with another sense of someone else's beauty touching your own. It's very lovely. I mean, I really do love that. When you're in theater and doing a show, you're sort of a little bit removed from that. You're sort of aware maybe of the effect that you've communally made with the other actors. But, you know, the show, the curtain comes down, you go back to your dressing room, blah, blah. It's sort of, you're separated from your crowd.
Mm.
You know, there's what they famously call the fourth wall, which is that, you know, you always keep that up in theater. But in cabaret, there is no fourth wall. I go into your heart, you go into mine. It's shared. It's really... It's an elegant thing, you know. I'm grateful that I get a chance to do it.
Well, after hearing you speak so eloquently, I understand what cabaret is. It's like you've just explained what cabaret is.
That's what it's supposed to be.
It's a magical thing. You have quite a lot of experience as a cabaret singer. You've sung at some of the most prestigious and well-known rooms in New York City, for instance, the Cafe Carlyle.
Mm-hmm.
You've done a recording called the Carlyle Set with a full orchestra, the Algonquin Room.
Four guys. Great musicians, yeah.
From the Carlyle Set recording, let's listen to Autumn in New York, Christine Andreas.
And bid the country a hasty farewell. So on this gray and melancholy day, I'll move to a Manhattan hotel. I'll dispose of my rose-colored chattels and prepare for my share of adventure. Seventh floor, looking down on the city I hate and adore. Autumn in New York, why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York, it spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds in canyons of steam.
Well, your voice has been described as a lush, soprano as a full voice. And that's got to be very satisfying for an audience. I'm just curious, on the day of a performance, you're going to be at Bethel Woods on Saturday at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. On the day of a performance, do you have any little special rituals or things that you always do on the day of a performance? What's that like for you?
You know, it's a little bit intuitive, but since the body is my instrument,
yes,
I just sort of cue into, you know, this feeling like I bend over chairs a lot, honestly, because I'm always trying to open up, you know, the pelvis and the chest and the back, and so I'll do some yoga or I'll do a hot bath or I'll take a walk. I mean, you're both energizing but also relaxing your body, because
nice.
I just want it open like a big bass fiddle, you know, like a big open bellows, you know. I want it open and so that the air supports me, and so without getting really technical about it, I just kind of baby it that way, you know. And I'm not allowed to have any wine the night before. Really drag.
Well, because
I want to be happy singing. I don't want to be singing defensively. And if my body doesn't, if I don't feel in touch, you know, if I can't feel my belly button, then I'm singing a little bit defensively, and it's never as much fun.
Wow.
For me.
Now, you mentioned that Martin, will he be singing in the Love is Good show?
Yes, he will.
He will.
A couple times, two or three times.
When you prepare something now that you live, your husband is your performing partner, I think that's got to be an amazing relationship when it works well. Here's a question. You recently did a performance in a play with music called Heartbreaker.
Yeah.
Which was about Judy Garland, and the composer John Mayer is writing about his love affair with her. And I'm just curious now, when you prepare that music and you prepare that role, do you coach with your husband? Do you coach with Martin? Do you work with other people? How do you prepare?
Well, it's not so much I coach, but I'm certainly open. You know, I have to keep it to myself for a little bit because I have to find my own touchstones. You know, again, it's an intuitive thing. You can be easily influenced, you know. And I was coached by Garland. You know, I kept trying to just, I read the book. The book is a wonderful book. It's John Mayer. I know it looks like Mayer. I would always get John Mayer. I would get, you know, really just trying to intuit how a soul, you know, could get so damaged, you know, with such a, you know, such a gift. And I was trying to find the beauty underneath all the pain, which was apparent in her singing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'd never played a character where, and I knew, and I really hesitated to do it. But I loved Garland so much that I just thought, well, I'm doing this for me. I can't be worried how people will make comparisons and critique, you know, because that's a scary part about doing somebody so
alive.
I mean, it's proprietary. People own Judy Garland. They feel like they own Judy.
Yes.
And I actually saw that in the reactions people had when I did it up at the Adirondack Theater Festival last summer. But it was all positive. And, I mean, grown men cry. This grown man cried.
Oh, yes.
And he just said, I had no idea she was in so much pain. Because at the end, she was just a mess. I mean, she was a total addict, and she was like 90 pounds, and she had $5 in her pocket when John found her. Everybody, her own family, just couldn't tolerate her addictions anymore. She was like a tornado, like a volcano. She just, you know, everything in her path, basically, she just didn't feel worthy of and kind of destroyed it. She was a scary being, and yet she still had her magic. You know, she still, and he really resuscitated her career. And so I put all these factors into my head first before, you know, there was a lot of homework and a lot of soul searching before I would let, you know, before I expose myself, I guess is the way to put it, which I think is works for me to do it. Certainly I'm malleable afterwards, but I got to fill my tank a bit, you know. I got to empty myself out, fill my tank, and then start paring away. And I suppose it's in the paring away process that I expose myself to people I trust. Certainly that would be Marty.
Well, what a remarkable portrayal it must be to see you do this performance as Judy Garland, someone that has obviously inspired you. And when you talk about preparing the role, it doesn't sound like you go externally. You work from inside yourself.
It's no fun. I mean, you know, it's no fun to go externally. I mean, if you're working on a dance step or something, you know, you might, you know, which there was a little dance routine in there. But, you know, there's a lot of flash in the external thing. I mean, I once studied, when I was young, two actresses, Sarah Bernhardt and Eleonora Duse. It was a wonderful book called A Mystic in the Theater. And it was written by Eva LaGallien, who was a famous actress in the 30s and 40s. And she was talking about really, truly being touched from the inside by performances. And she saw amazing people, but a lot of people never touched her. And then she saw Lorette Taylor, who was a famous actress. And she saw Duse. And she said, these women, there was this internal spark that ignited them. It's like Rosie Clooney, you know. Rosie worked from the inside. She always did. And she was truly herself. I think when you work from the inside, you're constantly uncovering yourself, you know, in lyric. You know, the lyric opens your heart. And the more you uncover a lyric and what it means to you personally, this is truly what colors your voice. Sinatra was a master at, you know, his voice had so many different sounds.
Colors.
Based on, you know, but it was all based on the words. And the words are your tuning fork or something, you know. They place your voice. They connect your breath. You don't think about it when you're talking, you know. I mean, I'm not thinking, but my voice is tremendously colored by my depth of feeling for what I'm saying to you. And so that just carries over into performance. So I try to work from the inside because it's grace, you know. It's what sustains me as an artist. The other way, which I did when I was a younger actor, I would hear sounds I liked and I would do those sounds. And it might be really intoxicating. I remember a famous actor, Paul Sorvino, once trying to break me of that habit as a young actor. We were working together. He said, it's really good. It's really good what you do, but it won't sustain you. And he was right. You know, but it's scary because you have to let go when you come from the inside. You have to let go of your ego and just let go and be inspired. And so there's a silence inside of you, you know. There's a quiet. There's no big marching band, you know. It's just kind of quiet. And you think, is this interesting? You know what I mean? But what's interesting is you, you know, if you're a good artist, and not me sounding like Barbara Streisand or sounding like Julie Andrews or sounding, you know, like Judy Garland. You know, what's interesting is me sounding like me, but trying to channel that energy that they inspired in me.
Christina Andreas, no one else would ever sound like you. It sounds like it's going to be a spectacular performance.
Skies are blue. that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly.
That's Christine Andreas singing Over the Rainbow in a live recording, Ben Zander conducting the Boston Philharmonic at Harvard. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then. Today's program features a conversation with the American soprano, Christine Andreas. No, I'm just curious, when I look at all of the majority of the music that you've sung, musical theater, Broadway, cabaret, when I look at the recording of Love is Good, there's two songs that kind of stick out because they don't fall into that genre. One is a song that's called The Song of Bernadette, which is written by Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
And you also do a Billy Joel song, it looks like.
Yeah. So it goes. Well, I just loved Bernadette because because it's a song of forgiveness of self, and you know, so it's just, and it's beautiful. So I love that, and I love the country violin in it, and So It Goes is the Billy Joel tune. And I remember when Marty and I were first going together, and we had a lot of past to work through, right?
Mm.
And that song is a real cry from the heart. It's about getting back in the ring after, you know, a couple bad, you know, rounds.
Mm.
And getting back in with your heart open, you know, and going, okay, so what's this going to be for us, you know? We heard the song. We were on our first wonderful out-of-town sort of date, and we went to Mystic, Connecticut, and this came on the radio, this song of him singing it.
Mm.
And it's so quiet, and so it's a prayer, you know, set to music. And we had to pull over to the side of the road.
Wow.
We just had to stop and let, because whatever we were talking about led right into the song, you know, and it was about keeping your heart open even though it's been hurt deeply in the past by another person. But opening, you know, what else are you going to do? You know, you stay vulnerable or die, you know. So that song, we just let it wash over us, and I said, well, we have to do this song. And that's how we ended the set at the White House.
In every heart there is a room, a sanctuary safe and strong, to heal the wounds from lovers past until a new one comes along. Thank you. I spoke to you in cautious tones. You answered me with no pretense. And still I feel I said too much. My silence is my self-defense. And every time I held a rose, it seems I only felt the thorns. And so it goes, and so it goes. And so will you soon, I suppose. But if my silence made you, then that would be my worst mistake. So I will share this room with you, and you can have this heart to break. And this is why my eyes are closed. It's just as well for all I've seen. And so it goes, and so it goes. And you're the only one who knows. Still I will choose to be with you, as if choice were mine to make. But you can make decisions too, and you can have this heart to break. So it goes, and so it goes, and you're the only one who knows. In every heart there is a room, a sanctuary safe and strong, to heal the wounds from lovers past, until a new one comes along.
Christine Andreas singing Billy Joel's And So It Goes. Well, it's a pleasure talking with you today. You've been so generous with your time and with yourself. We, everyone in our listening area, I hope that you will absolutely take the time to come to Bethel Woods Saturday evening at 8 p.m. and see this remarkable artist and performance. Thank you so much, Christine.
You're welcome, Kathy.
Okay. What a delightful woman. Let's listen to another song. This is a medley from South Pacific, Some Enchanted Evening and Younger Than Yesterday, Christine Andreas.
Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know even then, that some way you see him again and again. Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing. You may hear him laughing across a crowded room, and night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of his
Splendid Table from APM, American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper.
Thank you. Support comes from you and from the River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, New York, riverreporter.com.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello.
And good evening. This is WJFF 90.5 FM award-winning community radio, hydropowered public radio from the community at 90.5 FM in Jeffersonville and 94.5 FM in Monticello. The time is 3:59. Temperature outside our studios right now is approximately 72 degrees. We'll be looking at chance of showers and thunderstorms possibly tonight. Increased clouds with a low of around 61 degrees. And Sunday, a chance of shower storms and thunderstorms, possible high of 78 degrees.